Karen Talk Radio. Radio.
Peace to the ancestors. Yes. Peace to Dr. Cornell West. Yes. Peace to the movement.
Came from the bottom, ever since they got us, we've been going through these problems. 400 years behind and it's no promise that we gon' never actually be equal, to be honest. It's messed up how they put us in chains, kidnapped our language and changed our names. But when we speak Ebonics, then they call it a shame. They leave us with a couple options, rob us, slang, now we locked up a game. How much can our skin take? We went from slaves to inmates, carrying the weight of the 50 states. Working your forms, black nannies carrying white babies in their arms. Black men sacrifice their lives in your war. But you'll never show appreciation here at home. You treat us so damn wrong. You act like you hate my race. The police, they just beat us in the streets like an 808 base. America, when will you defend my case? You never will, cause your freedom is fake. I'm only living here cause I'm willing to get paid enough to round up all my family and shake.
Worst case scenario, might work, still a couple of quirks. Can't call it pancakes cause you pour some syrup. It's a whole lot bigger than a pretty new house, especially when the rodent's still running about. P. Diddy running marathons, races go. That's going to the school where the tax money go. Homeland security, now there's a phenomenon. Pacifying folks by hanging Saddam. Troops still riding, still obliging, still no Bin Laden. Tuned in waiting for the president's announcement. No 40 acres, take these 40 ounces. We ain't gon' get on the levees. Revolution televised early.
America,
is you ready?
Why you wanna treat me so cold, America?
Forced to climb, instead of have your back, have you beat and lost your mind? Especially when you done been down for so much time. Getting up don't even really ever force your mind. You got porn shop, gun shop, liquor store sign. SWAT team, crack fiend, unemployed line. Stay late, dollar short, trying to buy time. What we do to survive is defined as a life of crime. You can't ball, then you forced to grind. If you fall, then you cross the line. And I've been putting in work from 9 to 5 and 5 to 9. Since phone calls cost a dime. What it made me is one of the relevant, highly intelligent. Brothers not only dealing with the same drugs selling. If I'm a hustler, then what's more American? We all founded on the same thug heritage.
America, why you wanna treat me so cold? America, I done gave you all that I own. America, took me from my mama so young. America, locked me up and gave me your name.
America, 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 you know the black freedom movement. You know we've been trying to redeem the soul of the nation. Even as that nation been trying to render us soulless, but we're our soulful people, the blues people. We've been keeping alive the bus day banner of democracy. Thank God for those who came before. We shall never forget them and always move forward with grace and dignity.
America, why you wanna treat me so cold? America, I done gave you all that I own. America, took me from my mama so young.
Hello, hello, hello to all the listeners out there, and welcome to another installment of Dr. Mary Lee Live. Dr. Lee and her co-host James Cannon started this project about 3 years ago with the express purpose of providing a forum for us to discuss the contemporary topics of our day. Dr. Lee is the founder of the Neighborhood Commerce Institute. It's a national institute dedicated to community organizing, entrepreneurship, and grant writing services for all of those in need. Dr. James Cannon is the father of Nick Cannon, the president of the Nick Cannon Foundation, and the visionary behind 400 Years of African American History Commission. Dr. Cannon is dedicated to inspiring the natural calling of the everyday people. Dr. Lee is also joined by the usual panel of doctors, Dr. Anita Moncrief, Dr. Curtis Longs, and Dr. Don J. Harakti-Tynes. Tonight's show, Stuff Explained, it's in all caps, so I'm sure it's pretty important. But for now, without further ado, over to Dr. James Cannon.
Beautiful. Can you hear me tonight, sir?
Yes, sir.
Yes,
we can
hear you.
Okay, beautiful. Well, ladies and gentlemen, listen again tonight, because there's so much going on in our country, so much going on around the country and around the world, so much going on in our families. And as usual, we're here every Wednesday, 9 o'clock Eastern Time, 6 o'clock Pacific Time. And ladies and gentlemen, we're here tonight to have a discussion, and we've discussed so much. And because I know that, you know, we want to represent the young people and get the young people in this conversation, I know that what's really valuable at this hour is for us to be able to conversate. And tonight I think we're going to open up the conversation to just explain some stuff. We're going to explain some stuff and open up our lines and take some questions and introduce you to some new people. So take notes tonight, ladies and gentlemen, because we're excited about a lot. You know, again, I have the opportunity to work with young people, push and our Stop the Hating campaign. You know, and I'm excited because it gives us an opportunity to talk to young people, establish shows like this where young people can host them, young people can get involved. And Dr. Lee, I do have a guest on from out your way. So as we get to the lineup, I want to be able to bring him in as well, and Brother Steve Williams from Juneteenth Foundation and Corporation. I want to bring him in to have some conversation. But ladies and gentlemen, we're excited tonight. I want to stay on focus. I'm excited for the guest that's coming in. Dr. Mary Lee, you've done an outstanding job of bringing an outstanding group of people together as you do week after week. I want to say I appreciate you, and I'm excited to get into this conversation. I'm excited to hear from Steve Williams as well tonight. So, Dr. Mary Lee, I appreciate you as I bring you to the platform tonight, and let's just get into this conversation because, you know, it's so needed, ladies and gentlemen. And so, Dr. Mary Lee, I appreciate you tonight, and let's get into the conversation.
Thank you so much, Dr. Cannon and Jared, our announcer. We're just happy, as always, to be here. And welcome, Mr. Steve Williams. Glad you're here tonight. I want to remind you and others to tap one on your phone so that we can open up your line. So, Mr. Williams, please tap one. You're here tonight. We do have a topic, and it's about stuff. And so we're going to talk about some stuff tonight. And I want to welcome our medical panel, and I appreciate you all for joining us and just being here for, you know, all of your support. It's certainly a real blessing. So tap one on your phone, okay? Our medical staff, we do see a few of you, but I know some others are here and should be getting in the conversation. So tonight we're going to talk about money. You know, we need money, and we're going to talk about particularly monies that Neighborhood Commerce Institute is involved with. Okay, And I'm going to ask Dr. Cannon to come in here and just fill in. I do need to take, looks like Mr. Williams is having some problems, and so getting on. So Dr. Cannon, can you just come in here, talk about some money for a bit, and then I'll be right back. Dr. Cannon.
Beautiful, ladies and gentlemen. I'm hoping I'm coming in loud and clear. But when we think about the subject of money and we think about where we are in 2022, things are changing rapidly. Even though we've got what they say recessionary times right now, there's still a transfer of wealth that's taking place. And certain people are having those conversations in their secret chambers. They're not sharing the information with everybody. And so even though we've got good sources like the internet that we could go to and get information and talk about, you know, how to get ahead, how to move forward, sometimes, ladies and gentlemen, we got to dig a little deeper and we got to do a little bit more research, because if we take the knowledge that we can get and we use that knowledge, then it'll put us in front of the line. A lot of times we go around and round in circles, but we got everything we need. And we just need to get a little motivation attached to our knowledge. And our young people, that's what they need. They just need the motivation to get up and go get it. And then to understand that sometimes it is about a group, but then sometimes it's about the individual, that you got to get up in the morning. You got to get started. And you got to be motivated. And sometimes you might get discouraged. But when you have a budget of what you know you're working towards, because we're talking about money, and if it's a monthly budget or a yearly budget, but got to be a big budget, particularly in this hour when we can open up many different income streams. We want to be able to do that and open up those income streams, but we want to have a budget attached to it so we know what we're doing. If from this opportunity you want to open up $1 million in your account in 6 months and you want to employ other people to be able to help you hit that goal, I think, you know, a worthy goal, you have to have a budget, a target that you seriously really trying to go after, that is going to make you watch your spending. It's going to make you get excited about new opportunities, because you got a goal, you got a budget that you're trying to hit in a year. You're trying to put $2 million in your bank account in a year, not coming, not in the pipeline, but in your account where you under can, you can control it.
It's our efforts, little slumber,
little folding of the hands, and surely our poverty will come. So, ladies and gentlemen, it's up to Dr. Lee. I appreciate you. I think I hear you coming back in, and so I want to yield the floor.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate you. So, yes, we're definitely must get money into our own control. And certainly agree with you, Dr. Cannon, and regarding budgeting, regarding setting goals and meeting those goals. Absolutely can. And so we're going to just share tonight. Again, Dr. Longs, appreciate you, Dr. Moncrief, and Dr. Tynes. I'm not certain if Dr. Tynes will be on tonight. I want to ask you to please remember his family. They have had a loss in the family, and I know there's some traveling going on. So remember Dr. Tynes, his wife, and family. So we want to explain tonight who Neighborhood Commerce is, who I am, what we're involved with, and how, if you're not already involved with Neighborhood Commerce or part of the scope of everything, and then we want you to understand how you can, you know, get onto this these many, many opportunities. I do want you to ask questions, and I want this to be a very interactive evening so that we can use this, all of us will be able to utilize this show tonight in order to bring funds into, you know, into our own communities. For those of you who don't really know who I am, I'm a community person. I was born in the state of Michigan in a little town called Benton Harbor. I grew up partly in Benton Harbor and also in Detroit, Michigan. My parents were very, very humble people, very loving people, caring people. I remember my mom caring for the community, those who were like hungry or homeless. Very quietly, she would do certain things. She and my grandmother lived with us. We all lived together, you know, for the majority of my childhood and growing up. And I remember this song. I remember this, well, back then, we would, I think they're called panhandlers today. But back in my time, where we lived, we were along a railroad track. And so the freight trains would come through. And these homeless people, back then they were called bums, would jump, hop on and off of the train. And so every day, you know, we'd have dinner. My mother would always leave a plate. And on the table, after we've all had our meals and you know, gone back to the other part of the house. I remember the kitchen being towards the back, facing the railroad tracks. And so my mother would leave food there. And I don't know, you know, I was maybe 6 years old, 7 years old, you know, somewhere between 5 and 7. And, you know, people would come in, strangers would come in through the back door and eat. They would never say anything to anyone. And they eat and walk, you know, back out the door, go back to the train or wherever they came from. Later, I did learn that these were people hopping on and off the train, homeless people. And you know, that never left me. I remember that because, you know, not compared to, you know, today, the feeding of the homeless and the helping out of the hungry. She was giving them meals and doing a community work, you know, from her kitchen, from our kitchen, from our house. And I say that to say that, you know, God has placed us all here, you know, for a reason. And that's where I remember it kind of starting, reaching out and helping and feeding and caring. And then I remember her being extremely active in the church, my dad as well. My dad would take, he was like the town cook. I mean, he cooks. He's a great chef by just natural. And so he would cook, and he'd take food around this town, around the city, cook for everybody. The holidays come. We wouldn't just be celebrating, you know, just with our family, but, you know, all everybody else in the neighborhood, in the community. So I watched, you know, this giving and this loving and this caring. He would also drive people back and forth to, you know, the grocery stores, those who didn't have cars and didn't know how, didn't, you know, they'd be walking or just wouldn't have a ride. So, I mean, he'd drive everybody everywhere to the grocery stores, just took care of community and just took care of people. And so I share this because this is where I come from. This is my background. My dad was just an inspiration in the area of education. And he is the reason that you're calling me Dr. Lee today. My dad could not read nor write. He was at age six, you know, he'd tell his stories about being on the plantation or in the fields. He would plowing. His job was always to use a mule and to plow. You know, instead of him being in school at age six, he was plowing in fields. And picking and doing other things, carrying water, whatever needed to be done, whatever they had to do. Because my dad lost his mom at birth. He was giving birth to my grandmother was giving birth to him and to his twin. And he lost his twin brother and his mom at birth. 4 years later, he lost his dad. So he just became kind of here and there, like what we call today a foster child, but not a foster child within a system. But he was from one family member to another family member, people that he didn't know. And so instead of being cared for, in the area of, you know, getting this kid to school, they use him as, you know, in the area of labor, child labor. And so.
Okay, everybody.
And, pardon me? And so. I'm sharing this background information so that you will understand where I came from and which is very important to in where I am today. And without an education, you know, my dad, he always valued an education. He always pushed us to go as far as we could in school. Because he never had that opportunity. Even though he was an entrepreneur by heart, okay? You know, he did many things besides a regular job in order to support a family of 11. And without what he called handouts, he was too proudful. To take from anyone. He was always giving and always working, but he found time for his family. This is very important to me, what my family, what my dad, what my mom, you know, did in their during their lifetime. They didn't have near what we have today, but you know, we grew up not knowing what poverty was or and what not having meant, because they did everything within their power in order to give. So, you know, we kind of felt like we were rich all the time. I mean, we didn't know what, you know, rich, poor, we didn't know anything about that. But there were people in the community, you know, I learned later about the need for money and funds, budgeting, financial planning, all of that. I started to learn those different types of things in school. And some of it in school, then some of it just out of, you know, watching my dad and being with my dad in his various different areas of entrepreneurship. And so my education got me into a few doors. Very, very young, 17, 18 years old, I could type 100 words a minute. I could do shorthand at 150 words a minute. I could transcribe 100% accuracy. So what that did for me, and here again, I attribute that learning, that education to my mom and to my dad, but my dad was the strongest inspiration. I mean, he was the strongest inspiration. So right out of high school, I went into white corporate America. And there in white corporate America, I was exposed to a degree of racism that, you know, of course, I didn't really know what it was. I didn't quite understand it because my mom and dad would feed blacks and they would feed poor whites, you know, off of the train or give whites, you know, poor whites and blacks a ride. It didn't make a difference at all. And so I went into white corporate America at 17 years old, actually. I graduated early. And that's where I started learning and experiencing firsthand you know, what a racist system looked like and felt like. And there in the, there as I did my job, as executive secretary, I didn't go into, you know, as a general clerk or receptionist or any of that. I went directly into the boardrooms, you know, to transcribe minutes. I went directly into the presidential, the executive suites and the executive offices right from high school. And I tell you this, because that's where I learned, really learned the system, how I learned about redlining there, you know, how they literally corporate, not just the corporation where I was working at, and I'll tell you where it was at. It was my first, my very first executive secretary position, and I was the first black. And that was at Whirlpool Corporation in the state of Michigan, as you all know, headquartered in Benton Harbor and St. Joseph. Then there I got introduced to the Chamber of Commerce system. I learned about, I learned the organization of the community in the area of economic development. Then, of course, I didn't know it was economic development. I didn't know that, you know, all those businesses and entrepreneurs and the different types of funding sources and grants and all that I would see and in their planning, I didn't understand that that was what was called economic development. You know, I was sitting there taking minutes and knowing that I'd have to transcribe them into letters or a business plan or whatever my task would be. And so very young, you know, I learned the system. I was there in the boardroom taking minutes when the Chambers of Commerce members, the Chamber of Commerce is built up and made up of organizations, businesses, bankers, you know, it's a membership organization. And so they would have the top executives within the county, tri-county, the state, including politicians, you know, would come to these, you know, to these meetings, to these planning meeting events. And I was there doing my job as they were planning us black people, you know, right out of money, okay, right out of the system. I was there when redlining by way of zip codes. See, zip codes were created in order to be easily identified, I mean, right down to a science of where we live. And so certain zip codes during planning were given certain types of attention or no attention, you know, based on who, you know, who lived there. And so, you know, I watched the creation, the planning, and the structuring of zip codes. So, like years ago, when I first was working, there was there would be one number, like the state of California would be identified as one number. May have been seven or two or something like that. But there was only one number which identified, you know, the whole state. Well, that changed. And that changed for the sake of keeping us poor or making us poor or being able to identify us as minority and to target the communities where they would push us out by bringing in other nations of people into our communities and neighborhoods, utilizing funding that was to build our neighborhoods. That's where, you know, I started to learn that you know, how the banking system operates and how the banking system provided business loans, but all would be business loans. I learned about bonds as years went by. I learned how that there were certain monies coming from the federal government, you know, into the state government, you know, to the counties, and right on down to, you know, to the cities and into the neighborhoods. And the recruiting of those who would receive, you know, grants. You know, I learned about grant money back then, too. I wrote my first grant application. I think I was like between 18 and 19 years old through a program, what was called back then, it was called the Model Cities Program, which was a nationwide program that was to bring to create and develop entrepreneurs and programs in the low-income areas. So what the system did, they allowed money. The government has allowed big money to the millions and billions of dollars to develop cities, all the way down, you know, to streets, you know, any type of business, you know. And so our neighborhoods, okay, but it was set up for them to come into our neighborhoods and dictate to us how we were to live and what we would have access to and what we would not have access to. So the plan has always been to keep us out. It's intentional that we don't have information. We don't have access to information regarding business funding, business development, and running our own businesses. See, my dad was a trucker. That was one thing that he did. He was a trucker until they started requiring truckers to be able to read and write. Now, when industry came in and every type of profession became industrialized. So my dad, who had been over the road driving, you could say, of course they weren't semis like what we have today, but he was transporting, and he was growing, you know, he was farming and growing and transporting. That was how he was taking, one way he was taking care of his family. And so when trucking was industrialized, they used reading and writing to keep out who they wanted to keep out of the industry. Their grandfather in could not read and write. They knew the routes. They knew, and this is the way I learned to drive. I learned that as long as you know your directions, you know, your north, south, east, west, and these different highways, you can go anywhere you want to go, really without a map. And so, but instead of them grandfathering my dad in, he had to leave the industry. And, but they then were providing money for the truckers. They were providing funds. And this is money that did not have to be paid back, not just for the truckers, but, you know, for other areas of entrepreneurship and business. So I mastered, kind of like fast forward, over the years, once I understood exactly what these people were doing, exactly, you know, what types of millions and billions of dollars that were designated for our neighborhoods, but not for ours. They had their way of informing and bringing in every nation of people, you know, whether they were coming in as refugees, as they do today, or however they were getting here. They were sponsoring them here into this country, providing them with the monies, just as an example, that black hair industry. It's not an accident that, you know, that Asians, Chinese were, you know, selling our hair products to us. The hair industry was actually black. you know, Madam Walker, you know, she industrialized and that, you know, the beauty industry and built that beauty industry, opened doors for like Johnson & Johnson and others who created hair products. But it was so huge. We were building that without them, blacks. We were, and the barbers, barbers and the beauticians. And so they saw what we were doing. And here again, I was in the boardroom when planning started to take place. So they were built, all of those products were created, manufactured by us, self-financed. You know, they didn't give any money for that. They didn't provide any training. They didn't do anything. But what they did do, they stole it away from us. They planned to bring the Chinese here. They made offers to our black hair creators, our hair product creators, and to, we were distributing our own products all over the country, literally. You know, I've been to Chicago and other places and met with some of those who were doing, you know, who were our inventors. So intentionally, I mean, it was planned here again to get us out, you know, get us out. We got to take over, you know, this hair industry. And they basically did. They basically did. They bought the products. They bought the businesses. And you know, for a ridiculously, you know, low prices, because, you know, some of these products are yet on the shelves. And some of those owners or those creators of some of those products, you know, their families and regret. And some of the inventors, you know, I mean, some years I had conversations with some of the inventors and they certainly regret, you know, they understand now what had happened. But the aim has always been to keep us inferior, to keep us, you know, broke and, you know, without funds to do what we need to do. Now, to kind of fast forward, after, you know, many years, 40 plus years of working, literally working in white corporate America, from the federal government, with federal government, from the White House, I always said to the poorhouse, I've been, and helped to plan and organize and write and structure businesses, city governments, you name it, pretty much any type of industry, I have written business plans, you know, for. I was at the city of San Jose, you know, within their government for a while. There, I was with the, chief attorney, the head attorney for the city. And through that attorney's office, there were like 35, 40 attorneys that he managed. And there were about 35 paralegals under me. So we managed that entire legal department. All of the transactions, all the business transactions have to go through that legal department. And so there, you know, I gained an abundance, when I say an abundance of knowledge, tools, and know-how in order to to run a city. You know, so when you can run a city, you can run a country, because every city is run and operated the same way at state level and then federal level. So, you know, I kind of, you know, took all of this and you know, watched over the years and planned over the years. Out of this background, you know, I created the Neighborhood Commerce Institute. And what it does, it literally mirrors the government from federal level all the way to the neighborhood, village level in economic development. I have written and won monies for them in manufacturing, in building and development, housing, single family communities, to commercial, you know, to high rise. I've been involved in the paperwork and the writing and development at every level. I worked with President Obama during his campaign, during his inauguration, all of his activities. There was particularly, you know, during the inauguration, working with the transitional team. There's a huge amount of planning that has to take place. It was my system that I created to train, you know, for 18,000 volunteers who were actually working the inauguration. It was my system that once they landed in D.C., that system they had to go through in order to be vetted, in order to get their credentials, in order to get their assignment, you know, in a very smooth manner operation. That was my system. I also worked diligently with a number. There were about 400 of us who worked on the CARES Act. Out of 18,000 who were working, you know, on the ground, there were 400 who were acknowledged and brought into, you know, the reception day after his inauguration. And if you watched, you know, that we went through the White House, and you know, there was a meet and greet. And I was amongst that 400. I was one of those who co-signed on the CARES Act because I worked very, very hard, you know, with that. So, of course, I was one of the first ones who once it was all put together, you know, had the full document, and which even to this day, they call it the Obamacare, which to this day, I mean, we're benefiting from. And so I just kind of want to give you that little background so that you would understand who I am, where I come from, and where my drive and my passion comes from for building our communities. I'm not out here to take, you know, I'm out here to provide a service to you, to my people, in areas where you have not been, and may not even understand, you know, even a little bit about, you know, what has really, really, really happened to us as a people. So via through Neighborhood Commerce Institute, a system, a service, a platform for organizing Black America. Organizing Black America in the area of entrepreneurship, business development, whether it's for-profit or nonprofit, that's what we're here for. And we're here to provide you access to service funding, development, grants, venture capital, funding that we qualify for and don't know that we qualify for, all these different programs throughout the entire country. We're here to develop what's called community development corporations. The CDCs are organizations, primarily nonprofit organizations, through which funding flows through to build and to finance entrepreneurial projects and business projects. There's a fund called the Community Development Financial Fund. It's the CDFI. That fund is it's into the billions of dollars, and these are not just funds. These are products or funding that has been set up by law, okay, to build. So it's not just there. Been there for years. And so funding flows from what's called the CDFI fund down into CDCs, or Community Development Corporations. And so we are building, we're developing CDCs throughout the country in order to, in our neighborhoods, to be operated to be operated by us, okay, so that we can build. CDCs and the CDFI determine, you know, who gets funding. And out of more than 5,000 or so CDCs that are in operation right now, less than 1.5% are operated by Blacks, period. The CDFIs that are throughout the country, less than 0.5% are operated by Blacks. Now, these are decision makers. These are people who are getting money designated for our communities and making decisions for our communities. And those decisions include the laws such as eminent domain, so that they can take whatever property that we do own downtown for just a few dollars, or sometimes for nothing. Just, you know, you got to go because, you know, we've got a better purpose, you know, for this land and these properties and these buildings that your family has owned for so many, many years. So what are they doing? They're gentrifying with monies that are supposed to build us, with monies that are supposed to build us. And so my drive, my passion is to turn this thing around. And it has to be done with everybody on this line, everybody you know, and everybody that they know, and everybody that they know. Is certainly going to take a village, many, many, many villages on board in order for us to bring about an economic change. It's not going to happen with one person, okay? When they brought the agents in, they brought them in by the hundreds and took over the hair industry. I mean, you know, it wasn't a just pop up and they go. No, we have to plan and we have to work together. There's no other way that it's going to happen. No other way. We can march. We can cry out. I mean, we can go crazy. We can do, you know, whatever. Until we start, and the time is now, to work together and, you know, within the system. We have to do this within the system. And not bragging, not boasting or anything. We have so much talent. We have so many skills. Look at our guests here. And then our listening audiences. I mean, just look at what we have and the skills. We are running now. Now look, this is what they do. They get the money, they control the money, then they hire us to do the work, you know, in their offices or run the programs, you know, the United Way programs or the Goodwill. I mean, they get into millions and millions and millions and millions of our dollars. So who's working the programs? Who's sitting behind the desk? Who's going out, you know, just say, for instance, if to residential treatment, you know, families or, you know, these different types of programs, like for the prisons and the youth that our doctors talk about and the prison. I mean, there's money for the prison reentry. Who's working those programs? The heads are always white and the laborers are always black. We're the ones who are working the programs. So why are we not running these programs? Why are we not running the affordable housing projects? But we're working them. They hire us to come in and do the jobs. So if you just think about it, so what are they doing? They're getting the big money. They're the ones getting money to build the, we'll just say, the high rises or, you know, they're getting paid. They're being managed. They're getting all the management dollars. Then they have the top paying jobs, and then they give us, you know, the flunky jobs to do. Or if they do have us doing some accounting or some bookkeeping, you know, they're going to give us the lower paying job. They're going to give us the job where we have to go and make those home calls on these certain projects and these certain programs. We're the ones who are going into the homes, collecting information, taking it back to them. They're using us. They're using us, and they've been doing it forever. When we are very well educated, we have the skill set and the ability to manage on these projects ourselves. And that's my drive. That is the purpose of Neighborhood Commerce Institute. That is the purpose, to like flip the script. Okay, by the hundreds and the thousands of us together. And we can do it, whether we're in real estate, whether we're in social services, or whatever we're doing, building. It doesn't matter what we're doing. If we get all of our lawn care people together, if we were to organize all our lawn care people, who, whether they're working for someone or running their own businesses, under one management, one management, an umbrella of business management services, then we could take over the lawn care business with our laborers. Because what Neighborhood Commerce will do is provide those services. It will bridge the gaps and eliminate barriers via the organizing. Okay, so if you have someone who is a great landscaper, okay, don't know anything about bookkeeping, don't know anything about managing, but just has that gift of landscaping. And you get all those people together all over the country under one umbrella, we can write business development grants, okay? We can get venture capital for them. It's much more easier when it's done by the hundreds and done by the thousands of like-minded, like skills. That's what they did with the Asians, with the Chinese. That's what they did. They brought them here. They still to this day don't know anything about our hair, but where do we get products from? They planted that, and they've been there for many years now. Know nothing about the products, but they're organized. That is the difference. We have a platform that can organize or is organizing Black entrepreneurs, Black businesses, Black skilled people. It doesn't matter what you're doing, no matter what industry you're in, because there's somebody else out there who does the same thing. And so we bring these like services, like people together nationwide, and then we go as one entity together with hundreds. You already know. We already know the difference it makes with, with the Black Lives Matter after, you know, with the George Floyd killing. How the activists were brought together and funded. Now, that's a different topic when we talk about, what's happened with the funding and, what the intent was and what the intent was behind some of those funders, those people who provided the funds. But I kind of wanted to let you know that the millions of dollars, billions of dollars that are out there bring those dollars to us who are on this call, on this line right now, and build our own communities. That's what Neighborhood Commerce is about. We have a platform that will, at national level, we provide grant writing, business development services, and all of the grants, for every person or every business that becomes a member of Neighborhood Commerce, those grants will be written. They'll be researched, written, and provided and managed at national corporate level by a team of grant writers, grant managers, people, CPAs, accountants who know the system, that knows what's required. We're not cutting any corners. We're not, taking any shortcuts. We're going to provide the system what they are accustomed to receiving and granting. So that maximizes our opportunities for success. I mean, really, how can they say no anyway? They would be able to say no if we've got 2,000 or 3,000 entrepreneurs and businesses, that's applying for collectively across the country to build our neighborhoods, our communities, with grant money that is already allocated to do so. When we have qualified staff members that will manage and handle those funds just in, under the compliances that are required, So we meet all of their compliances at level. So we also, from the corporate, we will have state or regional level CDCs, okay? Regional level will provide a certain services in conjunction with the state. So the regional level is between the state CDCs. The state will communicate with the state politicians and the state government. Yeah, we will have 50 state-level offices. We'll have our regional offices that will act as liaison between our state and our corporate, our national level. Every state, then we will have county CDCs. County CDCs will be liaisons between the city and between the cities and the states. And then we all the way down to our local neighborhoods. Years ago, there would be what was called, they were called block clubs. So our neighborhood CDCs will look like our block clubs. However, the services are expanded into funding services, economic development, business development, along with social needs. So, example, your neighborhood CDC, anyone in that neighborhood, we want information for money. The information and the tools and the platform and the services to access funds to be available right in local neighborhood, right in your neighborhood. We want you to be able to walk to a neighborhood CDC. Our young people, and our families, to be able to walk to a business services office and tell someone, a staff member, their vision and what they want to do, and then they are connected all the way up to the federal level. That is Neighborhood Commerce Institute. So I'm going to just pause here because I want you to ask any questions before we go into our partnership. We've developed a partnership with the Funding League. And I'm going to tell you about that. It's phenomenal. It is a plan whereby just following this plan, which has been analyzed by the top 5 CPA firms in the world and concluded that, with their analysis, is that this is a plan that is, in fact, sustainable, just as it's laid out. And it's a plan whereby we together here again can really turn our finances and our economic around. Someone mentioned a shift earlier. This is the shift. This is the shift. For a long time, planning, writing grants, been extremely successful in winning millions of dollars, for other folks. and it's time for us to do it for ourselves. This plan, this project, the Funding League, is established to do just that, fund Black communities. Black Entrepreneurs is set up to provide seed money for businesses and entrepreneurs, and we ourselves from our own money. And so we're going to go a little bit more into that, but I do want to ask you to raise your hand and so that we can call on you for comments right now and questions. Okay, so let's start with 702-8124. Okay, your phone number is 702-8124. Okay. 602-0207.
That's me, Dr. Lee. It's Jared. I had to call back in because there was some static and I got disconnected there. So I dialed back in to the host queue. Sorry.
Okay. Okay, no problem at all. Okay, so we're going to go to Dr. Let's see. Do we have Mr. Steve Williams here? Mr. Williams?
Yeah. Hey, Dr. Lee. Hey, Dr. Lee, how you doing?
Hi. Doing well. How are you? It's been a little bit. It's been a little bit since we've talked. How are you?
Yes, how you doing? Steve Williams here, president of the National Juneteenth Observance Foundation, the organization that made Juneteenth a national holiday. The political ramifications of that is acknowledgement of slavery throughout America. So that's the political announcement. Our economic plan is very much like yours, Dr. Lee. We call it cooperative economics, and we work in small groups called tangences across the country. And that's one of the major things that those other organizations, our groups of people do. They're able to pull their money together in families or groups and then open up multiple shops and multiple businesses and then pull their money back into it. It's a very viable economic tool that we fail to utilize in this country. So that's one thing we're looking for. But I've got a guy on here who is a member of a legendary family. He's in Louisiana working in New Orleans, working to bring education and economic uplift to us. He's working with me on the nationwide tour called the Wave of Freedom. And under that Wave of Freedom is cooperative economics, which all of our state directors and our regional directors coming up this Saturday, I'll be getting a plan for. So we're on the same page almost. And you live around the corner from me if you're in Virginia. So I need to connect with you. And see what's going on. So, but I want to be able to bring on Damien Baptiste. He's probably got a 504 number. Other famous New Orleans guy. Yep.
Okay, 504. What are the last four digits? And we'll bring them on.
Oh, shoot. Hold on. Let me see what Damien's last four digits would be.
Why don't you just go ahead and tap
1147.
Okay. Tap one on your phone, sir, and then we'll open you up. We'll open your line. Okay, let's see.
Damien?
Okay. So they got
Damien.
Okay. Just give it
Damien?
A second. Okay.
Yes, your
line is open, sir. Yes. Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. Yes. Thank you for the great information that you gave out. I've traveled to South Africa for the last 24 years after meeting President Nelson Mandela, and I've created an organization called the New Orleans South African Connection to basically to promote diversity, equity, and inclusion, social justice, and black economic empowerment on the African diaspora level using music, arts, and culture. And we just had one of our family members to win 5 Grammys and nominated for 11. But we've done this for the last, you know, I'm 54, so I've been in the music business for about 45 years. It's using soft power with entertainment. But I agree with everything that you said. Can't wait to maybe work with you and see if we can bring some of your platforms to Louisiana and New Orleans.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I appreciate your being on here. And if it's okay, our tech can capture your phone number, and then we will reach out to you likely tomorrow, if that's okay.
No, definitely, ma'am. And I would definitely let our mayor, Cantrell, she's from South Central. She's the mayor of New Orleans, the first black female mayor. And we have a forum on August the 10th. I think New Orleans needs everything that you are speaking about. And I just told Steve the information that you're giving on the radio today should be converted into some type of a listening book for all of our students to hear, which is how your dad came up. It's very, very interesting.
Well, thank you. And that is what we are working on. That this definitely will be available on YouTube as well as the link itself, you know, for Blog Talk. You can always come here, and but we are making it easier, okay? We're going to make it easier and, you know, for access to these programs. And we are looking at and organizing right now so that we can have these written. They can be transcribed. You know, all of our shows will be. So I'm really happy and thankful to you, Mr. Williams, for joining us tonight, and Dr. Cannon, you know, for facilitating this. I appreciate it very, very, very much. And so we've got a lot of hands up. So thank you, sir. And I check capturing
your
number.
You're welcome,
numbers.
Dr. Mary Lee. And I'm going to call you tomorrow, okay?
Thank you
okay.
as well, ma'am.
Okay. Absolutely. Yeah, Mr. Williams has our number. Thank you so very much. Okay, we got a lot of numbers here. Error code 703-8523. Who do we have on that line?
That's me. That's Steve Williams.
Oh, okay, Steve. Do you have any more questions and comments? You know, you're doing so much out there. I appreciate you. We certainly appreciate you.
Well, definitely, I want to let everybody know that we have some things coming up. African Landing Day and Project 1619 with Calvin Pearson, who changed the course of history, definitely need your support. Please visit Project 1619. Calvin Pearson is why the 400-year commission was established, him and Dr. Myers. On August 27th in Fort Monroe, where the first black people landed in British-controlled North America, he will be having the African Landing Day ceremony. But Project 1619, the true story, definitely not the 1619, not New York Times, but Calvin Pearson, Project 1619. Definitely got to put a plug in with him. I want to thank the Baptiste family and, of course, legendary guitarist Michael Kiss Monkey Doug Hampton for taking part in the Wave of Freedom tour this summer. As we continue on to Rentersville, Oklahoma, one of the all-black towns left in Oklahoma, my family hometown, as a matter of fact, and the epitome of entrepreneurship and business in America was the black towns and Black Wall Street there. So the model for us to learn is in that history and how they did it. So that is Labor Day weekend, and the Funkativity Band with Michael Hampton, Damon Baptiste, and the legendary David Baptiste. I'll be performing Saturday, September the 3rd, in Rennesville, the all-black, historic black town in Rennesville, Oklahoma, the birthplace of John Hope Franklin, the first battle where black men defeated white men in the battle in the Civil War. Is historic right there. Mm-hmm. So those are the last things I wanted to get out. But thank you, Dr. Mary Lee. And on the economic point, I will definitely be in touch with you to see how we can merge.
Absolutely. I appreciate you so very much. Now, I'm going to go to the funding link. And then we are going to come back. Now, the funding link was created by a former NFL football star, Michael Reddy, and his daughter. This was created, and by his daughter. His daughter skipped. I don't know if you're on here tonight, Mr. Reddy, Michael, if you or anyone from the Funding League, if you're here tonight, tap one on your phone so that you can join the conversation. So the Funding League is a fundraising system, okay, created by a black family, and the daughter kind of, she skipped high school, went directly to college, and came up with this. She and her father, family, together. So it was created by a black family for black entrepreneurs and black nonprofit organizations. Now, I've been following this family and this organization for over a year now, almost a year and a half, during its development stages. It's designed to result in seed money to individuals, businesses, and organizations in the black community only, okay? Yet, it's designed to generate funds worldwide from all ethnicities. And trust me, all of them are ready for this self-funding operation, and they're jumping on board already. It's worldwide, and they're coming on board worldwide. So you already know that NCI is in the business of economic development and business funding opportunities for our black community, and particularly funds that are already established. Now, this funding, it is a fundraiser designed, if you can imagine this, it's designed to provide $38,000 monthly income for yourself, your business, or your nonprofit. And this is from people who just play games on the internet. Now, there are levels of income funding possibilities. That includes the $38,000 a month. There's a $69,000 a year, $38,000 a year. And keep in mind what I said earlier is that this project has been reviewed and analyzed by the top CPA firms, which are all white, okay, in the world, and it has been, ruled or summarized that this is a viable, sustainable plan, for building our black communities, okay? So I want to get into just a little bit more information about the funding link. Now, if you can just always refer to the Girl Scouts, the Girl Scouts and the Girl Scout cookies. So if you can think of this gaming product, which is a gift card for gaming. They have created a game, okay? So there's a game, there are tournaments that are going to be involved. But if you can think of this gift card, gaming card, as a Girl Scout cookie or your baked, you know, your baked, you know, baking cake drive, or you're selling chicken dinners, or selling barbecue dinners. All of these are fundraisers, okay? So the Funding League has a license. It licenses the participants. It empowers everyday people and nonprofits to drive real-world impact through the adult social gaming, okay? The mission is set to capture 9 to 11% of the potential and power of casual gaming customer base, okay? This is a multi, the United States gaming market is made up of 244 million gamers. 164 million are adult gamers. 25% identify as a gamer. 75% spend money and time to level up. 79% is age 18 and over. Okay. The gamers are donors. Okay, we need everyone to put their phones on mute because I'm getting an echo. I need your phones on mute. So basically, they have created a league, it's a competition where we would actually win gifts and prizes, competing and playing games, you know, with people anywhere in the world, you know, through this system. The $38,000 level per month, that level, they have named that level the celebrity host level. That level requires it's set up for a $250,000 investment. Now, there are celebrities and wealthy people who are making that investment. But the Black family that created this wanted to make this available first to Black entrepreneurs, okay? So the aim is to bring on 1,000 Black entrepreneurs, nonprofits, or individuals at the cost of a yearly gaming gift card, which is $240. But in exchange for you coming in, only the gift card price you would be required. We're required to work. Okay, we're required to manage tournaments, and you know these are all virtual. The gaming and the competitions are virtual. They're 3 or 4 per year, where they would actually come together in Las Vegas or somewhere, and then do live gaming. Okay, but at that level, as celebrity host or manager for tournament hosts, 10 tournament hosts. The 10 tournament hosts would be at the $69,000 a year level. And for managing 5, each one would manage five nonprofits. Those five nonprofits, and we're after, you know, we're seeking the grassroots, the poor, you know, nonprofits. You know, the aim is to build the Black nonprofit organizations up, okay, financially. And so here again, the tournament host, at the $69,000 a year level, would be supervising and also can also do fundraisers as well, you know, with the gift cards, $19 tickets, which is the fundraiser, or the $240 per year gift card. Now, they have made this so very, very, very easy to get into. The fundraisers, your nonprofit can be your, you know, you've got cheerleaders, you've got, you know, kids in sports. They're always doing fundraising. I mean, they're selling T-shirts, you know, or they're just collecting money. You know, I just give money, you know, for fundraisers just because they're family members or friends and don't eat the cookies, don't eat the chicken, don't wear the T-shirt, but just giving. But we're replacing those things that we don't use with a gift card for gaming that someone will use and can win money in doing so. And we're building our nonprofit organization at the same time. Whether you're in a school, church, just a community, women's group, men's group, you know, boys group, kids group, everybody can use this. Then so a certain percentage of that money that they would go back into the company is coming right back to the Black neighborhood as seed money for businesses and for entrepreneurs. And neighbors, we partnered with, you know, the Funding League so that just say if you don't have a nonprofit but you have a social idea or you do have a nonprofit, but if you don't have one, then Neighborhood Commerce is here and would actually be the platform through which you can operate as a nonprofit. The Neighborhood Commerce Institute would register your project, help manage that project, and file the necessary paperwork with the state as a fundraiser. Now, we do fundraisers all the time. You know, most states require registration. Almost every state requires us to register fundraising activities. But most of the time it doesn't happen. Now, here again, back to the purpose of Neighborhood Commerce platform, we want everything up on the up and up, everything legal, no shortcuts, you know, trying to turn, you know, cut any corners, none of that. We do everything legally. We want everybody to be, you know, authentic. And so this is why we're providing that platform services, you know, with the Funding League. But this is a phenomenal opportunity. You know, it's a platform. The platform would manage like 12 million, 16 bracket qualifying events per month. And we're talking about online. We're talking about 250 million games, and it's scalable. It's events for everyone, cash and a guaranteed value. And these are all with, you know, virtual seats, virtual gaming seats. And so it's a huge, huge, huge opportunity. And that, you know, anyone on this line, your nonprofit, can take advantage of. And so what I'd like to do now is to go into a question and answer regarding the funding leap. If you have any questions, you can just, I think you can unmute your phones and you can jump in here or raise your hands. While we're doing that, I'm going to ask, I'm going to go to Dr. Moncrief and ask you to kind of give us your thoughts at this time.
Well, good evening. Very, very interesting conversation. I remember a few months ago we talked about the funding leak, and we had, I think, the father and the daughter who started the funding leak concept, and we had a lady come on who was representing them, and at that point she was out and talking about how excited she was to, you know, be a part of this and being on the ground floor. How about an update on what has happened since they were on the program a few months ago?
Okay.
There was a program that they were planning in Las Vegas, I think, that was coming up maybe in July or maybe in August. I'm just wondering what has happened, and have people, community people, got on board, and what kind of experiences that they're having. They were, planning on having this convention. Has it occurred yet? And, you know, just an update. Thank you.
Okay. Absolutely. Yes. If any of you are here, I would like for you to tap one of your phones so that you can join in here. So basically where it is right now is that the convention, it was the event in Las Vegas was the launching, it is the launching of the actual, project. And so that date was pushed off into October. So it's been pushed into October. We do have quite a large number of people signed up. This is aimed for the Black community. We want more Black participants. We want more Black participants so that when it launches, when the convention takes place, it's not all other people. Personally ask for, was part of the planning, and personally ask for more time for us to get on board. And so that we can get the word out into our Black communities and for our Black entrepreneurs and fundraisers, our nonprofits, to get, you know, this can be exposed. We want to have more exposure. And so this is another reason, you know, for this project, for this program tonight. And we are reaching a lot more people. We want strong representation. This is for us. And it's so easy to become involved. You know, they'll do $40 a down and $20 a month. How easy is that to come in to an opportunity to be able to earn $38,000 a year for your nonprofit, or $69,000 a year managing, or at the $38,000 a month? opportunity. And so we're constantly fundraising. And we want Neighborhood Commerce ask for an opportunity to get the word out, to be a part of the training, to be a part of the organizing of the nation, of our black nonprofits. And so that's where we are in the black community, and we are making very, very, very good progress. Very good progress, and there's some projects whereby they're going to be like whole denominations of churches signing on board, as well as other large projects, and I'm not at liberty to say some of those on right now, but it is happening, and it is very, very, very real. And we're getting universities on board, and the Neighborhood Commerce is the managing platform. Did I answer your question?
I think you did. I was hoping for a little bit more statistics on people who actually signed up to participate. I hear you saying that that there's a lot of people who are gamers. How are those numbers looking?
Okay, right. The gamers, the game. We have one game, and that game will not launch. It will be launching, I believe it's August the 15th, and but there's a demo, and I'm going to need to confirm whether this is correct or not. If any of our team members are on, I'd appreciate it if you would tap 1-2, if you could answer any of these questions. But there's a demo that I believe anyone can play, but the actual gaming and competition will happen, I believe it's August the 15th. And so it's just now, we're on the ground floor. And so we do know that we will have at least 100 gamers playing on, the middle of the month when it opens up. We want, but we are recruiting more. So we want, our aim is 1,000. And I'm not 100% sure where those numbers are right now. But I do know of 100, and we have, our team is very, very active.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Okay, Dr. Long.
Good afternoon. Excuse me. Good evening, Dr. Lee. Yeah. So I'm primarily listening and just learning more and more, taking in terms of the mission statement. And for me, I'm not my background is definitely not in finance and things like that. So all of this has been a learning experience for me, and look forward to learning more and participating.
Okay, great. Thank you. Error code 331, last 4 digits, 5238. Your line
is... This is Mallory Hill, one of the team members working in conjunction with the Neighborhood Commerce Institute, and have been with Dr. Lee for about 100 days or so, and very excited to be a part of this the project. The people here in the Midwest, where I hail from, are coming on board daily. Many people are excited to know that there's hope that we're giving to the black community. And I think one of the things that is important, and as I think Steve Williams said, what Dr. Lee gave us in the first 45 minutes or hour is priceless. And while we may have various parts of this country or in the world, or at least nationally, ideas about what has happened historically, we are in the presence of many of us who are on this call, maybe have lived some of these experiences, but are now able to bring to fruition exactly what we've lived, but for the next generation, a legacy of economic development in any capacity, in any part of our country, and we're able to give her that. And I thank her for letting me have the opportunity and making me aware, and I brought others with me as they have. Thank you.
And thank you so very much. We're very excited about this. It's a worldwide opportunity, and there are some very large organizations who are on board. Because they're not here right now, I want to respect, you know, their business. But we have some VIPs who are joining us, and this is the tool. This is a tool. It's not, you know, all about the gaming, but it is a tool in order to bring finances using our own money. This is the thing. We're not having to ask anyone for any money. You know, it's our own money that is being put back into the community. Error code 323, and your last four digits are 4318, and you are live.
Good evening, Dr. Lee. Good evening to everyone. I appreciate it. My name is Lee Hong, and I'm calling from San Diego, California. I do appreciate your shows. You've definitely been faithful to it, so I want to say your labor of love is definitely not in vain. I just had a question to pose to Mr. Cannon, if I could, and I was curious because I caught wind that he had some books out, but I wasn't sure where the books were available. Thank you.
Okay. Yes, the books are available at on Amazon. You know, you can, I believe you can go in and search his name and all of his books will come up. I don't see him right now, or else I would just pass it on over to him. But, you know, I can tell you that they are available on Amazon.
Thank you, Dr. Lee.
Oh, you're welcome, and thank you for joining us and being so supportive. Thank you so much. Error code 334, last four digits are 7477.
Tonight's show was just truly very inspirational, just learning so much about your upbringing, Dr. Murray Lee. It's always just intriguing that, you know, you come from a long line of just overcomers, and you just always just give such good inspiration every Wednesday night. It was truly a really interesting learning experience. I learned so much this evening.
Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us, and I appreciate you. So we're going to...
Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to start wrapping it up for tonight. If anyone has any more questions about anything at all, you can just jump in here and, ask. I could go on and on with my life. I've had a lot of challenges. I mean, a lot. And still yet today, because of the work that I do, and I've had threats. I've been literally followed or attempted to chase you know, to chase me, you know, by, you know, white supremacist, you know, because of the work I do. And so, but I know this is my calling, and Dr. Cannon talks about our calling. We are here on earth for a reason. And I do know that mine is to organize us for this day and this time. And it is happening. It is happening in a huge way. And so we don't want anyone left out with your ideas, your plans. And yes, we will be building black medical schools, hospitals, residential treatment homes, foster care homes, boarding schools, all of these things are in the making, farming, you know, technology, you know, training, and any and everything that you can go to college for, or to any services that you can get from the Salvation Army or the Goodwill or the white operated businesses, organizations such as the United Way. We are developing those right inside communities, and they will be operated by us. So I think we're going to go to Dr. Long to, you know, to kind of summarize our night for us. And then we're going to go to Jared, and then we're going to ask Dr. Moncrief to give us our summary for tonight. Dr. Long.
Again, Dr. Lee, I want to thank you for all your expertise and wisdom. And tonight was really about providing greater information regarding your passion with the programs that you and Dr. Cannon came up with. And it's been very informative. And the most impactful part for me was, again, listening to your story in terms of your family survival. And it had me thinking about a lot of the things in with my own family, in terms of the things that my mother and stepdad were trying to do in our community. So in general, the night was very inspirational. And just personally, I look forward to really being more involved in getting down to business and helping our community. Thank you.
And thank you. Certainly appreciate you. Jared.
Yes, ma'am. I'm here. Wow. That's all I really, really have on a personal level. Just, you know, your story, everything, and just, you know, listening to how it's all funneling towards something that is a greater calling for us. In this way, you know, and it hints at, you know, Dr. Cannon's inspiring the calling of the normal everyday person, kind of a thing. It was powerful. It was very, very powerful. I mean, so much so that I'm really feeling like a spiritual move in where my words go, and I'm hoping that the Lord will guide what I'm about to say, because I want to speak about perspective, about black philosophy, about black identity, about the things that people like Dr. Tynes was bringing up, black pride, being proud of the idea that you're black and not ashamed because of all of the things you've been told. If you want to know and tap into those things that are still being told as stories for us today about how Harriet Tubman set those people free, those people were afraid, they were in bondage. You want to make a connection with the idea of the type of things that Moses was experiencing when he was trying to tell people, you know, hey, come along with me, cook the unleavened bread, or don't cook the bread, just make the unleavened bread and be prepared to go. this is where we are. We're kind of on that precipice right now. And all we need to do is to reach within ourselves and find that thing that at one point before we got beaten down by a lot of the things that happened to us in this life in America and whatnot, and understand that this is our way out of our new bondage of Egypt. This is our new Egypt. And if we're not capable of seeing that this opportunity is here or ready and have that unleavened bread packed and ready to go, then you will be left behind. And no one wants to leave you behind, but the train is moving. If your spirit is not moved by hearing the stories of overcoming and hearing all those other things, and I'm a layman myself, right? Oftentimes when I hear about these big, grand things, they sound very nebulous and separated from me. I've been out here, I'm almost feral in a way, you know, being a black man living in America, having to deal with a lot of the hardships that come along, you feel isolated, you feel very separated. And I'm sure that that's not just a black male thing, that is a black thing, generally speaking. We're alien to the concept of coming together to make something really powerful happen. And even if we are committed to the idea of it, we've been subjected to so many starts and stops and starts and fails that we get afraid of this as a thing. We should not be afraid. Dig deep. Understand that in your very bone marrow is the courage you need to be a part of moving this big thing forward. And you don't need to make the huge swaths and moves. God has touched certain people to make those huge swaths and moves. All you need to do is reach within and rediscover that inspiration that you had at one point to make a change, to do something. It doesn't need to be the world's greatest lift. Lift something small. But if you got 10,000 people standing right there next to you helping to lift a little small bit, you can lift tonnage. You can lift tons. You can get this mantle off of your back and you can move everything forward. All you have to do is show up. God bless you, Dr. Lee. God bless all of you for everything that you do. I'm always humbled and I've been so inspired by what I heard tonight. Thank you so very much. God bless and good night.
God bless you as well. Dr. Moncrief.
Yes. It's very, very interesting conversation. I think for me, and I don't know about much of the listening audience, how they feel about it, but having to work hard for my money, okay, it's mm-hmm. it's hard for me to part with it, and when I choose insure things. That's that fear that I have. And there's going to have to come a point where people like me have to leave our fear behind and invest in our futures. You know, we need to invest and trust. I think that the movie, the play, Raisin in the Sun, when the son wants to invest in the liquor store and it's a good plan and if only he worked with the right people, and then when he's taken advantage of, you know, the lesson that's taken away from that. But if the right people, if it wasn't for Willie, okay, if he had invested mm-hmm. with the right person, he could have realized his dreams. And I think one of the messages that to take away from tonight is there are some people like you, Dr. Mary Lee, who are trying to get people to not be afraid to take that first step. The first step can be a small step, like Armstrong said, one small step for man, one large step for mankind, or it could be a huge step. When you're talking about mm-hmm. the entertainers or and the athletes, those who have deep pockets who can afford to get out there. So the message that I'm taking away from tonight is there are opportunities out there. We're going to have to man up, woman up, and take advantage of those opportunities. And as entrepreneurs, as inventors. I have my own product that I'm trying to get to the market, that there's organizations, again, like yours, Dr. Mary Lee, who are there with the good heart to want to help people who are getting started. And so that needs to go out into the universe, and people need to say, this is an opportunity for me. This is a chance to start. And I wanted to thank Dr. Cannon. He's right there on the ground floor. You know, just basic, you know, things that we need to understand. You need a budget. You just can't go out here and make money. Okay, you got to spend money to make money, and you've got to plan on how you're going to do it. Having a monthly budget, a yearly budget, a budget, being able to set a goal of what you want to make in 6 months, where you want to be in a year, where you want to be in 5 years. You have to plan. Without planning, you can't get there. And then I guess, finally, the thing that I appreciate, and I hope young people appreciate this, was something that you started off with. You have to be in the room. If you're not in the room, you don't know what's going on. If you're in the room, you can see how things are being planned. And you don't have to be a voice in the room. You can be quiet and just listen and learn. But you've got to be in the room. So that's the things that I took away from tonight. There's so many lessons, hidden lessons, and there's so many obvious lessons. But thank you guys for sharing the information tonight. Thank you.
And thank you. I certainly appreciate all of you so very, very, very much. I do feel like, I believe I feel like Harriet Tubman felt when trying to persuade, you know, the slaves to take a step toward freedom. And, you know, this here, I've looked at many, when I say many, many, many financial plans and prosperity plans and opportunities, you know, with from all different nationalities. And one, and this one is by far, I know, is fail-proof with us coming together to do it. And $240, I've gone for one service and have to spend more than that. And this is, I mean, and they make it so easy, $40 and $20 a month. Now, if we were to go and if you were to come to me and ask me to do a grant search and to provide you with grant opportunities for 1 year, just to do the grant search and the chart, it doesn't even include any writing of any grants, but I would provide you with no less than 20 grant opportunities with deadlines, contact people, what the approach would need to be, you know, whether it's a letter of intent or how you're to approach them. You will get all of the information required to take that step to start applying for grants. I would charge $3,500 for that. I have charged, depending on the client and what they were looking for, $5,500 for that. and they pay it. And you know who I'm referring to when I say they. They have been my sustaining, they have sustained my livelihood, my entire adult life. Because they understand the value. Neighborhood, I've had organizations. I've had them to come and try to pay me and buy me out of the plan. I do have it copyrighted. I've got it written. And everything that you read on the website, you'll see that it's copywritten. The full strategic plan, I've never disclosed. But I'm looking for you to disclose it to. And that is those who are extremely trustworthy. I refuse to leave this earth with the knowledge and the resources that I have. And I can tell you that I have no less than $30 million in intellectual information. And it's going to be out there. It's going to be out there. And these are tools that we could use as a people that I developed and collected over the 40-plus years that I've been in the arena of funding. And so when I saw the funding league, I mean, other nations of people already doing this since Mr. Reddy and his family, you know, created it, you know, in all over the world, different parts of the world. But it's intended for blacks. It's intended for us. And we're moving slower. We're moving slower. But when I saw this, I know I would not be here, would not be sharing this with you if I didn't have the confidence and the background to see and know that this here will work. There are, you know, I can see our young black people, our young people into this, you know, strongly. But when sometimes when certain things are presented to us as a people, it's like, oh, it's too good to be true. Oh, but it isn't. I've seen, I know what this here is, and I'm very confident. I'm so confident in it that anyone who would join the funding league and become a member, I'm willing to, they will automatically become a member of Neighborhood Commerce Institute and would receive services equivalent to and more, I am in this, that what I would charge $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 for, we will get it done for you as a team with just you're joining and working in the funding league. That's how much confidence and belief I have in this, because I know that when we all come together, we would not be here having this discussion had not Harriet Tubman persuaded, you know, people to take that chance to get to freedom. Don't turn back. Just step. You cannot think about it. I mean, by the time we try to analyze it, I mean, we don't analyze the airplane. We might think about it a little bit, but we go on and board that plane and pray. You know, some of us, like myself, you know, I believe in the laying on of hands, and I lay my hands on that plane every time I take that step onto that plane. I lay my hands on the plane. And so let's lay our hands on this and do it as a people. We can. And change the, you know, this paradigm shift. Just do this. I'm excited about it. I appreciate you all. I love you all so very, very, very much. I want you to stay safe till next week, and we're going to figure out what we'll be talking about next week. I love you all. God bless you, and I appreciate you all. One thing, I want to give you a phone number. Those who are listening and you want to learn more about Neighborhood Commerce and the Funding League, you can text your email address for more information to 1-571-998-1964. That's 1-571-998-1964. So again, I love you all. Stay safe until next week. Bless you. Good night. Good night, everyone.
Peace to the ancestors. Yes. Peace to Dr. Cornell West. Yes. Peace to the movement. Yes.
We came from the bottom. Ever since they got us, we've been going through these problems. 400 years behind, and it's no promise that we gon' never actually be equal, to be honest. It's messed up how they put us in chains, kidnapped our language and changed our names. But when we speak Ebonics, then they call it a shame. They leave us with a couple options, rob or slang. Now we locked up a game. How much can our skin take? We went from slaves to inmates, carrying the weight of the 50 states. Working your forms, black nannies carrying your white babies in their arms. Black men sacrifice their lives in your wars, but you'll never show appreciation here at home. You treat us so damn wrong. You act like you hate my race. The police, they just beat us in the streets like an 808 base. America, when will you defend my case? It never will, cause your freedom is fake. I'm only living here cause I'm willing to get paid enough to round up all my family and shake.
Get up, get up, get up, get up, get up, get up.
Might work, still a couple of quirks. Can't call it pancakes cause you pour some syrup. It's a whole lot bigger than a pretty new house, especially when the rodent's still running about. P. Diddy running marathons, raising dough. That's going to the school where the tax money go. Homeland Security, now there's a phenomenon. Pacifying folks by hanging Saddam. Troops still riding, still obliging, still no Bin Laden. Tuned in waiting for the president's announcements. No 40 acres, take these 40 ounces. We ain't gonna get on the levees. Revolution televised early.
America,
is you ready?
Why you wanna treat me so cold? America, I done gave you all that I own. America, took me from my mama so young. America, locked me up and gave me your name.
When you steady being forced to climb instead of how you back, have you beat and lost your mind? Especially when you done been down for so much time. Getting up don't even really ever cross your mind. You got porn shop, gun shop, liquor store signs. SWAT team, crack fiend, unemployed line. Stay late, dollar short, trying to buy time. What we do to survive is defined as a life of crime. You can't ball, then you forced to grind. If you fall, then you cross the line. And I've been putting in work from 9 to 5 and 5 to 9. Since phone calls cost the dime. What it made me is one of the relevant, highly intelligent brothers not only dealing with the same drugs selling. If I'm a hustler, then what's more American? We all founded on the same thug heritage.
Why you wanna treat me so?